If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, anyone know what channel the game's on?
We know. Download the Sports on What app today and always know how to watch the game. Satellite, cable, or streaming. Sports on What knows the channel the game is on, and you can too. Subscribe today to start your 7-day free trial. Sports on What. We know.
The shenanigans continue. This is the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
A question, what did you not know would be the worst or best part of that job? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, John. Welcome to the Men's Room.
Hola.
Hola.
Hey, thanks for the shenanigans, guys.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Oh, that's just, it's what happens at Burger King.
Yeah.
would you go to a Burger King location if we told you Miles is going to work a one-hour shift there?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I would order the six-piece, and I would swear I only got five.
Depends on how good you look. You might get seven. You might be a good-looking man.
Well, if that's the case, I would probably only get like three.
You're really, oh, damn. They're really lucky I wasn't on the sauce duty, man. I would have hooked her up with like two barbecues.
Hey, worst part of the job. So I used to work up in the boats at a Dutch harbor fishing.
All right.
And we'd fish 16, sometimes 20 hours a day, and it was just horrible. Most tired I've ever been.
I mean, what do you do for those 16 to 20 hours, right? I mean, I can only base this on what I see Deadliest Catch, but you can't just be dropping pots, right? So, I mean, you throw the pots over, and then what, you go out and pull up other ones, or what?
Well, actually, we fished pollock. It was a catcher process.
Ah, okay. All right.
So the first time I went up there, we start off at what's called the candling table. So, fillets go by, and you watch them go by with light underneath, and either there's, if they have a bone or a parasite or something, you flick it into the trough, and that's the whole job.
That's it. And you can do that for 16 to 20 hours a day.
The most boring, monotonous, horrible job. But that's not even the worst part. The worst part is when you finally get off shift, you have a buzzer that goes off, and you're off shift, you get to chow, which is like the best part of the job, because I mean, they fed you really well. But then you go to bed, and because that's all you do all day, there's nothing to dream about. And yeah, and I think one of the most interesting things is like the human clock, how your brain works. Like it's still, it kind of wake up the same time every day, right?
Yeah.
So I have this dream of how bad my job is sucking and how much I hate it and how horrible it is and how I can't wait to get off and get some chow and go to bed and get some rest. And then the alarm goes off, but I was dreaming. So it's not the alarm to get off of work. It's the alarm to go to work.
And so you just have the dream about how much you hate your job. Then an alarm wakes you up so that you can go live, quote unquote, the dream.
Yeah. I mean, it F's with your mind really bad because you're all excited in your dream. It's like, yeah, I'm going to eat. I'm going to go to sleep. And I'm going to, quit this candling thing for a little bit. And then you did it. And you're startled awake, and you have to go to work.
How long did you do this as a job?
I moved up and stuff, got on the deck and things like that, but I did it for probably about a dozen years.
So you were in the bottom of a boat. You weren't like in a cannery in Kodiak. You were below the deck.
Correct, yeah. It's a catcher processor. So we process the fillets that we catch.
Now, I'm assuming that when all this is said and done, though, the wad of cash in your hand kind of gives you a little bit of a relief, right?
Yeah, it does, but of course I was young and dumb and you know the rest.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, the smell of cocaine in Alaska, I heard, is pretty good.
So I would make really great money, and then, of course, I'd get back. I used to live in Spokane at the time, so I'd fly back. And, of course, I had dozens of friends, right, because I've got this big wad of cash, and I'm just everything is just great and partying all the time. And then I'd spend the next 2 weeks before I go back up bouncing from couch to couch because I blew all my money.
And how well? So you said you did this for 12 years. What is the season? So if you're doing what you did, how long are you away from home?
3 months.
Three months. All right.
Well, that's why. Yeah,
three months on and then 3 months off.
It used to be the RVs that were in Ballard were fishermen. Because, you know, just like anything else, there's no point in signing a lease on an apartment.
Of course not.
You know, when you're only there for a certain amount of time. So the couch surfing makes sense to me because practically, you unless you're going to live in a hotel for, you know, 2 or 3 months at a time, you really don't have
a
permanent residence.
Which I actually did a couple of times, yeah.
Why did you do it for 12 years if you hated it that much? Was the money good enough? Like you said, you're young, so obviously that money goes toward things that young men enjoy. I mean, was that the allure of it?
That was definitely the allure of it. And then after that, it's like, shoot, this is my skill set.
Okay.
Now, uh-oh.
I guess I got to go up another time.
Do you enjoy eating pollock?
I don't mind it now.
All right. Well, I was going to say, look, I boycotted Burger King for about 5 years.
That's because you were angry.
Yes.
Not because the food is
because
bad.
Because they fired me.
Right.
That's why.
Right.
But I still had a reason not to want to eat it.
Well, what do you do now, man? Because like you said, that's your skill set. And I ran into that with restaurants. Like, this is not what I want to do. But kind of to your point, I don't know what else to do, but I have enough experience that I get hired at another job. They pay me more money. That's cool. I blew it on the same things you did, you know, cocaine, booze, chicks, weed, you name it. But at some point, I'm like, okay, this is my skill set. And to this day, I could do it. I just don't want to do it. So what do you do now?
I do part-time management.
Okay.
Is there anything about Alaska you miss?
Oh, it was beautiful up there. I would go on the bow, put my Walkman on, crank it up, and sometimes it would be like just glass, where you could not only just see the nice round moon reflection, you could almost see like stars in the water. It's just
damn
breathtaking.
That's been awesome.
What is the strangest thing you guys pulled up in a net?
Oh, whale hip.
A whale head.
A whale head. Who chopped it off?
Sorry. Hip. I don't. It was just a bone. It was decayed because that was we were doing drag net in that time, so we just pulled up.
Okay.
Big old whale hips.
How far up did you guys go? Did you ever have to deal with the Russians?
Oh, yeah. We went, St. John's, I believe, was the island up there. And they would do their training exercises. And you would see this little gray boat off in the distance. Do your job, look up. And then there's this just big, massive destroyer, like, pulling right next to you. Just guys just kind of nodding and smiling at you.
And I guess that was fairly routine at that point?
Fairly routine, yeah. I think they just used us for training exercises.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Try not to hit fishing boats.
Yakov Smirnoff.
Yeah.
What did you not know would be the worst or best part of the job? 206-803-ROCK.
By the way, do you remember the ads for that style of fishing? But it was in the back of Rolling Stone magazine.
Always.
They never said what the job was. It just said, hey, do you like to fish?
You can work in a processing plant or a cannery or on a boat.
They had those, and you'd ignore that. Like, well, I don't want to do that, but it says, do you like to fish? And I'm like, man, almost everyone I know likes to fish. And then when you hear what the reality is, it's like, you're not up there fishing.
But
it
also said between $22 and $25 an hour.
Right.
Which at that point in time, it was like, oh my God, I make that in a shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, it was the same way. That's how I got into door-to-door sales.
How do they spin it, though?
Like, it was in the papers. Like, you like sports? What's it? You know, I like talking to people. Like, whatever. So you go in for the interview. And I recognize it now, but like they have a standard form.
Yeah.
And if you answer a couple things correctly, then they'll be like, all right, let's get you in for some direct marketing. Right? At no point do they mention what it is. You just show up the next day and direct marketing is you're knocking on doors.
Right. Yeah, I got burned with that once.
Right. You could make this much money, which you could.
You could.
But that was a day to day what you made depending on how many you sold.
Right. How long did you do that gig?
3-4 months.
Wow. You stuck it out that long.
Yeah, I wasn't bad at it. I just.
That's not what you want to do.
Yeah. Right.
And no one's happy to see you.
It was cultish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like those people.
Hamlet, kind of.
They spent all the time together. Then it was like, before you knew it, like you had to work. You didn't have to, but basically you had to work on Saturdays as well.
Sure.
So you're not done till Saturday night. So you're working like 6 days a week. Then they want you to go on like these, like, we got to go see the New York office and how they run stuff.
Oh, Jesus.
So, I mean, it was very cool.
Well, but you could also go up to a house and go, I am not knocking on that door. And when I worked for the Census Department in 1990, I was part of that group. It was me and another guy. And for whatever reason, the manager was a woman. We got the pay was unbelievable because it was a federal job.
Sure.
I mean, comparatively to West Virginia.
Right, right.
So it was like $6 an hour or something. It was nuts. It was double or triple. But we were, because me and this other guy were young and kind of in shape. I was playing football at the time. We were the people that would go to where other Census Bureau counters felt uncomfortable.
But they sent you there.
They sent me there and another dude named Zach.
Oh, this place seems dangerous. Miles,
so
go
the,
do
it's
it.
It's the gate that says beware of the dog. No trespassing. Violators
will
be
shot. Yeah.
All those things. But guess what? You got to walk up that driveway. You need to knock on that door, and you need to get their information. They no matter if it's a residence and they did not return something, you needed to go up there and counter ass. And so that was the worst part of that job, was just not knowing what was in store. Was it going to be a dog running down and attacking you? Was it going to be the guy on the porch? What would happen when you knocked on the door?
So I'm more comfortable with the guy on the porch than the dog, because the guy on the porch, he might want to shoot you, but you have an ability to negotiate your way out of there without getting your head. But the dog does not care. The dog is going to grip your ass one way or another. There's no explanation.
And sometimes you go up there and all this crap, and there'd just be a woman there saying, like, are you guys hungry? Do you want a sandwich? Yeah. Will you come in? Could you help me move this? You know what I mean? Like,
right, just some old lady.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. Where she's just trying to protect herself from, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And some of those experiences were great. But, I mean, going up there, man, because we had to wear button-up shirts with a tie, man. You're just pitting. You know, it's in the summertime. You're just sweating, and you're sweating more because you're nervous, and you think you might get shot.
I get nervous anytime someone knocks on the door that's wearing a tie and a coat, right? And it does not happen much. And look, there's like the missionaries to come around. You can kind of recognize them. Like, yeah, I'm going to give you 1 minute of my time, but we both know this is not going anywhere. But just so you can tell your boss, like, hey, someone, listen. But years ago, we had a guy, he knocked on my front door. We're in Baltimore, and it is two dudes. They're wearing black suits. They have the sunglasses. They have the ties on. They're the U.S. Marshal Service. But they're knocking on our front door. And I'm the one who opens it. And I'm just like, oh, man. And they introduce who they are immediately. The badges flash out. And I wasn't quite sure what the marshals did at the time. But I knew that is a federal thing. You know, so they're like, you know, it's your father or mother home. And I'm like, why? Because I don't know. I don't think my parents are up to no good. But, you know, 15 years old, I'm going to be the buffer here that prevents them. So I'm like, why? They said, we are looking for someone. It's not something we can discuss with you. And I'm like, I'm not getting anybody. And the guy's like, son, we're not here for anyone at this address. He said, there is a neighbor of yours. So the house next to us had been converted into three apartments. One of the guys that lived there, I didn't know him, but I knew who he was, if you know what I mean. We're looking for him. Why? That they would not tell me. So my mother walks down. And ma'am, and so they basically give her the same spiel. And she's like, look, I know who you're talking about. Honest to God, we never really talked to him. I don't know where he's at. And they said, well, we're the U.S. Marshals. And she points out, and this is true, my uncle is also a U.S. Marshal. So she goes, do you know Frederick Cox? They're like, oh, Rick, yeah, man. But she invited, they hung out for like 2 hours, drinking coffee, trading stories about my uncle, because my uncle is always the cool guy. He's the guy that had the red Corvette Stingray. Then he got rid of that and got the Smokey and the Bandit Pontiac, whatever the hell it was, right? So they're talking about him. And so the joke about him that we didn't realize, but we started watching it on TV, because I said, look, man, your brother's vain, if you don't mind us telling you so. And she's like, oh, I know. And she's trading all these stories about when they're kids. So they said, look, he shows up on TV a lot because anytime we get a fugitive that the public is aware of, you know, they put it on TV to say, you know, Myles Montgomery's been found, you know, on his way to Guatemala, whatever. And they never use a sky ramp thing. They always walk downstairs. So they said, one thing about your brother, they'll be on the plane, right? And they fly this guy back to wherever they have to fly him back to. And they're like, maybe he hasn't shaved or his necktie's crooked. Once they say, hey, guys, we're landing in 10 minutes, he's in the bathroom. He reeks of cologne. His hair is perfect. And he never spoke on TV. But sure enough, after that, maybe I saw him three more times on TV after that. When he walked down the ramp or the stairs of the plane, he looked cool as hell. He did. And they were like, but that's kind of the knock we have on him. It's like he's this disheveled mess most of the time. But once he knew, they're like, ABC News is going to be there. My man was sharp as hell.
What did you not know would be the worst or the best part of the job? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Dirk. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
So I was going to tell you about my strip club DJ thing, but I want to address what Ted was talking about real quick about answering a job thing in the paper.
Yeah.
And it said home stereo installation. This is in the Bay Area in the late 80s. And I showed up for this job, and it was basically organized mafia, and we were selling the speakers out of the vans. You've probably seen or heard these guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. They had that real shiny cone on the inside.
Yeah. It was a polypropylene cone.
Yes, it was.
Fluid. And I see those at the Goodwill now. It's kind of funny to see a pair of those speakers there. Anyway, I worked at as a strip club DJ for a number of years in the Bay Area and up here. In fact, I worked with Susan Cupcake Jones.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, the comedian is now in L.A., yeah.
Yeah. No, I worked with her up here in Lakewood.
Okay.
But, of course, you can see what the perks of the job would be.
Sure. All the cocaine and women you can deal with.
Exactly. Not a lot of cocaine those days. It was another white substance, but I digress.
Meth?
Yeah, a little meth.
Yeah,
I did a little skate with that, yeah.
Dabbled. Yeah. I mean, look, that makes sense, because you're talking what?
Lakewood.
Lakewood, 2000s, yeah.
Right,
Cops.
Right. You've seen Cops, yeah. Shocker, right?
Yeah.
Well, the worst part of the job, at least for me, was, you know, when women work together or live together, what happens with their cycle and stuff?
Sure.
Well, that seems to be the case, but that would be emphasized by the fact that they're all prima donnas in their own mind, right? So you've got a girl on stage that you need to pay attention to, and somebody that's going up next that you need to get their music set, and then you've got other girls that are coming at you. Why don't you like me? So basically, you have.
Why would they think you don't like them? What was their tell on your part as a DJ that obviously you must not like them?
Because I wasn't listening to them at the time, because I was involved with the onstage girl and the on deck girl.
Okay.
So I need to do my job first and foremost, because otherwise everything blows up. And it was why did you play that song? That's my song. And they would, you know, anybody that showed up with, they discovered a new Kid Rock song or whatever at the time, you'd get it. That's my song, so it would be held to pay, usually on the tip out, then it would be held to pay, because you did them dirty, or so they thought. So
okay, I got a couple questions for you. At the time that you're DJing at the strip club, however long you did it, what were the most popular songs and or artists? Like, what were the songs where the girls would have to fight about who got to dance to it?
The Ba with the Ba, that was the big one.
I can't imagine anyone arguing about that.
Yeah.
Can't imagine anyone stripping to that, doing meth.
That would claim that song, yeah.
What did anyone do, like, when the children cry? Or was there, like, a song that you thought this is completely inappropriate? Like, why are you dancing to this?
Not inappropriate, but there was one girl that I remember, you think of how they dance and move to the music kind of thing. And some of them tried to dance and it looked goofy. And if they didn't know how to dance, I would say, just crawl around slow to the music.
You're not wrong, dude.
And just flash your stuff around. But there was one girl that used to act like mime out the song. So when the children cry, she would make a little kid gesture and then rub her eyes and do this. It was, so
what? Like interpretive dance.
Comical.
But wait, yes. I mean, did any dude there find that sexy?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say,
nobody's,
man,
looking for that.
That is the instant turnoff.
Put on Tears in Heaven.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right.
She had a name. It was, she had appeared, I believe, in Hustler magazine or something. She had a special, I guess it's a talent. Her name was Naughty Pines.
Naughty.
She tie something in a knot, a pair of appendages that are the lower belly button. Yeah. Huh.
I mean, look, for that, I would sit through When the Children Cry. I'd watch that.
She wouldn't do it on stage, but yeah, that was
apparently. Do any of those girls ever use their real name?
Yeah. And a lot of them, I was surprised, used like their son's name.
Ew, man.
It was known like a gal had a
Bill.
Son named Desmonique, so she was Desmonique.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there was some that I find out later. Oh, that is a guy's name, not Graydon, but something like that. Like her name was Graydon, and then all of a sudden I hear all these boys are now named Graydon.
I thought you said Gravy.
What was the best perk of the job? What was the best thing that you didn't expect?
Not that I didn't expect, but I kind of like to put my music onto people. So they want to dance to whatever, and I go, well, I want to hear this song, and I would have dudes that would tip me for the music I was playing. So I would play like a Tool song when they didn't necessarily want to hear a Tool song,
right.
And I would inadvertently just kind of let the song go a little longer. Oh, the solo's coming up, this is my favorite.
To be honest with you,
I mean, a Tool song would be, if I have paid for a lap dance, give me a Tool song.
Yeah,
Tool,
I mean, Metallica.
I feel like they always at strip clubs shorten those songs somehow.
Right. I would want prison sex.
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be 3 minutes is too long. Yeah, they're trying to rifle through those songs. Towards the end of the night, I would start playing some short, you know, usually heavier.
A question from the text line. They want to know if you remember a prostitute named Star. As he goes to the mental world of dance.
I don't remember. I remember a few of them that did step out, but they weren't overtly prostitutes. Most of them didn't seem to be overtly prostitutes. The name Star rings a bell, but I couldn't put a face to it.
I feel like Star every strip rings club a bell. Has a star.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Does stepping out just mean you maybe have one or two clients that you trust?
Well, you could tell by the way they would be, let's say, managed.
Okay.
There would be a guy that would necessarily show up. I mean, the boyfriends always show up to pick them up if they have boyfriends, or often show up to pick them up.
Sure.
And would hang out. And then we'd kind of become friends too, because you're friends with them, a lot of them.
Okay.
So you become friends with their boyfriends and, you know, hang out with them.
All right. Makes sense.
I didn't see a lot of prostitution going on, but I didn't really go in the champagne room, as it were.
Yes.
Yes, where you know what's happening.
What did you not know would be the worst or the best part of the job? 206-803-ROCK.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed. Because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So, download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday early access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Always live on the free Odyssey app. From the Pinkies Plumbing Studio, you're in the men's room. Text the guys at 206-803-ROCK.
Michael Shue Casino and the Reunited. New originals this Saturday at 2 o'clock. It's free show. We'll have all the beers for you, all the brats that you can eat, the salsa. And again, as we say, cheers to 20 years.
Yeah.
Get back a little to our friends at the Fisher House. Hang out at the casino. Watch me win on Hot Stuff.
Hot Stuff. Yeah, Hot Stuff.
Hot Stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kill that this time around.
It's a popular slot machine.
I don't have to pay for the ticket, so why not? It's a free show.
You know, good point.
Might as well put my money in the slots. Walk out of there a millionaire. A question, what did you not know would be the worst or best part of that job? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Roman. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, gentlemen.
Hola.
So, I used to work for a cable manufacturer for a number of years. Some people might think that's for like cable TV, but it was a lot more intense than that. We built things like, cables that went into like radar systems, gunships, nukes, and all sorts of stuff. So my boss and the work I did were great. Like we learned a lot of technical skills. I went from being a custodian to doing this job in like 3 years. And so I got to learn a lot of cool technical things, working with microscopes, really, really like high tech work kind of. So it was really interesting. The downside of it was, there was probably the best representation of the United States of America's population put into one workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had just this amalgamation of both really odd people mixed with like really, really conservative people mixed with really, really liberal people, and all sorts of things from both sides of the boat. America. Yeah, it was America.
But all in one place.
About 30 people.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think that's the difference. When they're all in one place, it seems unusual. We recognize what the country is, a million different types of people, but when they're all in one place, either it's very good or it's very bad. The same thing in restaurants, right? Like, anyone can cook, right? That's long and short. Well, if you can, that's a job you can get. So, I mean, you had a little bit of everything from everywhere with every opinion that worked in the kitchens. But what I will say, there was more camaraderie than there was debate, right? Because one thing we did agree on is, like, this sucks. We all know what everyone's making, right? So you can have any opinion you want, but it's we're very unified in this moment.
So were there any perks to the job?
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
Okay. I think the perks were just all the things he got to learn and do.
Yeah.
Right? Like I said, working with the microscopes. Anything you get to do with the microscope seems cool to me. I don't know why. But like, if you have a job that says, no, this is part of like your tool bag, like,
right,
ooh, that must be cool. But then there's things that kind of let you down, right? So like, you can watch all these cop shows on TV. And we know that obviously what cops do day to day is a lot different than what you see on TV. But they talk about the forensics lab. And that always looks cool, right? Because when they go there, man, it is this high-tech thing with glass walls, really cool lighting, all these great computers and all that. And then you watch, like, Dateline or something, and they talk to people that work in forensics labs, and it looks like an elementary school class. Fluorescent lights, man, beige-ass walls, old-ass computer monitors. Like, that job looks horrible.
I think at this point, if I was a cop, I'd be like the old alcoholic detective.
smokes like cheap cigars. And like, his personal life's a mess.
Of course.
But God damn, he's good.
Yeah. He's an alcoholic. He does things his own way, which means it's illegal.
Exactly.
He beats witnesses.
We've been working this case for 6 months. Montgomery, call it Smith.
Well, I've been to marriage counseling. I've been to individual counseling. And I know for a fact that... You could just look into the eyes of these poor people and know what they do for a living every day and just think to yourself, this is awful. Everyone is just coming in here and unloading.
I mean, think about it.
You have to sit here and you have to listen to it. And even if you have a good life, it still must be hard to hear people who went through probably much more traumatic things than I have or whatever the situation is.
But when
is.
You're done with them, you get to see the next person who also has
equally a myriad horrible. Of crap.
I would think the worst job, man, and you never really think about it. Everyone bitches about social media. Fine. But... And talk about the people on Facebook, it could be X, you name it, but the people that filter out the worst of the worst. Yeah. So you go on social
PTSD.
Media.
PTSD. I've read articles about it.
Right. You can lose your mind and we can scream and piss and moan about all the stuff we read. Like, somebody said, look, that's the best of the worst. We'll let this go through, but the stuff they eliminate from getting there. And right, same thing. And I've read those things where they're like, look, man, I lasted about 6 months, but. Particularly in other countries, because certain news organizations in other countries, they really don't. Like, we pixelate everything. They'll tell you, hey, the video you're about to show is going to be disturbing. Well, it's not, because we never show anything. They show it all there, man. So, like, you're watching kids get blown apart, and they're like, we get this video, and it's not that someone is being salacious. It just came from this news source in a different country where they're a little more actual, you know, about the magnitude of decisions you make. I guess that's the way to put it. And they're like... We have to watch this thing, and it's like we can't even find a place to pixelate.
I saw a story on the news when I was in Johannesburg about that. They have these those centers down there where people work for whoever they work for, Facebook, whatever.
Yeah,
and it's their job to flag child pornography. And
right, about that.
All these things.
That'd be horrible
every day.
And that's basically the story. These people were having to take multiple days off. A lot of them never wanted to travel out of their own country because of everything they saw around the world. Blah 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 blah. I do have some high-pressure jobs, speaking of, that you have to have a high tolerance for being yelled at, and a few of them. Customer service reps, especially if you work at a call center.
Sure.
People take a long time to get to you eventually, and they're already frustrated by the time they do. Teachers, they get yelled at by the kids and by the parents, and by their superiors as well. Members of the military, obviously, that is expected.
That's built in.
I think if you go into that, you know that's probably going to be something that
they keep yelling at me.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Referees from pro sports all the way down to Little League.
There
was a time I did take a summer job part-time, but I loved it. I was a baseball umpiree. umpire.
Oh, look at me. I'm an umpiree.
Jesus. For Legion Baseball. All right? Now, with Legion Baseball, you had no pad in front of you.
Yeah.
You basically were just wearing like an underneath kind of pad, shoulder pads, knee pads. I did not have steel-toed shoes. Most of the guys did. But when you get behind the plate, you need to protect yourself because it's up to the catcher and foul tips and everything else. And there were times where the parents at that level, because their kids were so good, they weren't really nitpicky about a lot of things. Like, they weren't like, put Timmy in.
Right.
You know, he's already at that level of baseball. These guys are already playing at a pretty high level. Most of them are going to go play college baseball.
I was going to say, most of those guys, right, like... Because you could still play senior Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're playing Legion, like, my brother was good. He played Legion, but he played college,
yeah,
too.
Sure. Also, these kids are kids. I'm a kid. I'm 21. They're all 18, 19 years old. I know a lot of them.
Yeah.
They're my same age range. So, for me to be in this position of superiority. But the, you know, just making a call, blowing a call, whatever the deal was, it was never the player. Player would look at you and go, pfft, and run off the field.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you get a timeout from the dugout, you know? And then the manager just, this old dude, salty, gut, chawing, big old baseball player, slowly just walks up to you. And, I mean, he gets within 6 inches of your face. I mean, you want to talk about, like, a close talker, and he might be talking quiet at first. But then all of a sudden, man, he will go off. And you are more terrified, I think, by the managers of the baseball teams and making a bad call than you are worried about parents, about players, about any of that. I was always intimidated by the coach.
Oh, sure.
Because it was just, they could dress you down very quickly.
It's because you're 21. Like, my brother even says, like we're going to get booed as part of the game. And he says, legitimately, there's not an official in the NFL that cares because it's 70,000 people at once. And it's just based on
what stadium you're playing in, right? And he goes, no one knows what they're talking about. They don't know the rules, so whatever. We call the rules. You can like it, you can not like it, but people take it. The players, he said, are very decent in the NFL. They'll plead their case, but the NFL does have that hard rule, like, don't be disrespectful. You can plead your case.
Correct.
But he
they
said
do, they do a good job.
And I won't say which coaches they were. Both of them are no longer in the league. But he said there's one coach, if he called you over, you're just like, God damn it. And he goes, because this particular coach knew every single freaking rule. So he's like, if he called you over, there's a chance you screwed it up. And he wasn't a big yeller. He would have said, like, hey, Adrian, you know you blew this call, blah, blah, blah. But don't worry, you'll find out Tuesday. That was coach's way of saying, I know the day you get graded. And he's like, that was kind of the dressing down.
That's
like,
slick. I heard you sell that.
You'll find out Tuesday.
But you knew. But he goes, you hated it because you knew he was right. Then there was another coach, who I will not name, who he said, very caustic, very loud kind of guy, just in general. And he said, he'd call you over. My brother's like, do you watch football? Like, do you know any of the rules? Like, what you're yelling, that is not a rule. Like, you might be mad that this thing happened. He's like, it's tackle football. The guy tackled your player. Like, that's how the game played. It was not dirty. It was not flagrant. It was not late. But he said the scariest time for him, when he first started officiating, he was doing inner city D.C. high school football games. And he goes, it was not the coach. It was not the parents. He goes, man, it's straight up the players, right? So you'd make a call. The player would be like, I'm going to see you after this game, ref. And he's like, you knew the guy meant it, man. Like, the 17-year-old kid, if he said he's going to stab you in inner city D.C., he's going to stab you. So he's like, at the end of the game, man, I grab my money, I tail it to the car. So he goes, like, honestly, man, the NFL is no sweat because it's just everyone understands the game for the most part. Yeah. It's just, but he does get the occasional voicemail, and I will not say what team this person represented. And I said, how did she get your phone number? He goes, I don't know. But he played the callback for us a couple Father's Days ago. And again, I will not say what team she claims to be the queen of, but she goes to this whole thing and she's like, you blew that call at the end of the game. And she explained why, you know, what her case was and all this. And he's kind of laughing about it. And she goes, so I'm going to wait by my phone and wait for your apology, right? And I said, man, that was the message. He goes, yeah, that bitch is stupid, man. That wasn't. And he goes, and she missed the whole point that the reason the game was this close was because her team sucks. She doesn't remember the three fumbles and the two picks that were thrown, all these penalties. She's like, she's mad about that, and she's wrong.
Jobs require a high tolerance of being yelled at. We have cops. That's no kidding. Healthcare workers. That includes doctors, nurses, even vets. Emotions run high in crisis, especially when it's medical. Pharmacists. This has nothing to do with what their job is. They end up being the middleman for insurance stuff and insurance companies that people can't get a hold of. So if something changes on the cost of your medication, that's not on them. They're the ones, though, that have to give you that news. And they're the ones that take the brunt of whatever your insurance company has decided to do.
Right, your insurance company screwed you. They're the messenger.
Social workers. That's a high-stress environment. I worked at a Department of Human Services, another summer job I had. I was a file clerk. We would get half days off. People would call in and threaten to shoot their social worker. Because either they were going to take away their kid, or they were going to do something, or they were going to report their positive drug test.
They were going to follow the law.
Right, yeah. Do their job.
Yeah, and you know, they would threaten to come in and shoot. So we.
Do
all,
you think that helps your case when you leave that message? Well, I'm going to come in and shoot you. Okay, sir, that's why I'm making this decision to do this thing.
The girls that were at the front desk were, you know, just a little bit older than I was, and they were the ones that were taking the brunt of these calls. Those calls never got transferred back. You know, I'm not saying that the caseworkers didn't get yelled at, but they would call up and just absolutely be belligerent to the desk, and that call most of the time would never get back.
Right.
But I've heard screaming matches where, you know, guys had to escort people out of that office. Gate agents for airlines, no kidding, stressed out travelers all day, and line cooks are jobs that require high tolerance for being yelled at.
Gate agents, though, it doesn't happen often, but, like, gate agents and flight attendants somehow, like, it's the airlines that screw them.
It's the airlines that
screw
them.
Because they F people over, and then I don't know if they just tell them, we have no idea or whatever, but, like, everybody knows that the airlines are lying.
And the gate agent is, well, the thing about the line cook being in there, it's like, all right, so almost every other job you named, it's right, the customers are yelling at you. And if you work in any job where you know customer service, you at least expect to get yelled at. You don't want to be. It might not be fair, but you know that's part of the deal. Line cooks, you know who yells at you? The freaking chef who's not actually cooking.
Yeah. Right?
Customers do not get up and physically walk into the kitchen. It happened once. I told the guy I'd stab him if you ever walked in again. Once in 12 years of cooking. The customers don't yell at the line cooks. The wait staff, If you screw up, yeah. But if you screw up, you deserve it, right? It's understood. You can make good on your mistake. The only person yelling at you when you're working in the kitchen is the chef, who, by the way, like, why are you wearing an apron when you're not cooking? But they scream at you all freaking day long. So even when I see stuff like Gordon Ramsay, and I have a hard time watching those shows, but I don't know if he does or if he does not. But on the shows, it always shows him cooking along with the people. And I'm like, I had one chef that actually cooked with us. All the rest kind of showed up when we opened. They would quote-unquote expedite and F up the whole system that we had. Their apron was clean. They're wearing their chef coat. And then, just like you said, the manager, they'd walk out to see how your meal is.
Well, he didn't cook it. What was the worst part of the job? Was it like cleaning the grease trap? Or was it
dealing with customers who are picky?
Or was it... was it people who you're working with that weren't competent? Like, what was the biggest pain?
I mean, it's all that. You can say, like, cleaning. I don't care what job you have. If there's something you have to clean at the end of your shift, that's probably, you just want to be done, but you got this. Right, so that's line cooks. Any job that you have to clean crap up at the end, that sucks. But that's understood. But everyone does it together, and all of you are equally miserable, so there's some camaraderie there. But honestly... you know, exactly what the list says, man. The worst part to me, we know
not
what
watching
we're doing.
People die.
It's a high-stress job. You'll get picky customers, but that was almost more comical because you realize how idiotic people can be. Like, Jesus Christ, I'm not going to make you medium rare chicken. Like, sorry, it's not going to be pink in the middle. I don't want you.
Some people, honestly, I've had to come to realize this over time. Some people, I don't think they realize how picky and how ridiculous their orders are until somebody kind of goes, Jesus Christ, dude. Like, just order something else.
But we would you'd get a bit. It's annoying because you're busy, but you'd still get a chuckle. Like, Jesus Christ. Because you kind of make the thing like, I am so glad I'm not dating or married to whoever that customer is. But yeah, the chef generally sucked the most. Because they're screaming and yelling, which is fine, but you're not contributing. You're physically here in this kitchen. These are your recipes. And we're doing the best we can to get it out, but you're not doing anything. So it's the equivalent of, I don't know, if the CEO of our radio company walked into the studio and yelled at us during the show about everything that we're doing wrong, but never went on mic to talk, but was fully capable. Like, bro, you're capable of doing this. So like anything, at least in my experience, if you want it done right and you have the ability to do it, you do it.
Yeah.
You say this to children. What? But chefs are a weird breed. They're a strange, strange breed.
We run into that a little bit, though, in our industry.
Oh, we do.
There's a lot of people, and I get it. Like, there's a science behind how, you know, which songs you're going to play and this and that.
Sure.
But I have also definitely had conversations with bosses where I finally went, what show did you work on?
Right.
Did you entertain people?
Oh, they hate that.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, I know. I was like, how do you know? I get it, right? Like, you could be a football commentator. You don't have to play football.
Correct.
But
typically,
yeah,
those are play-by-play guys. Those are guys just telling you what's going on.
But that's the they're not telling you what they did wrong.
Yes, they're just saying what happened. The color guy does that, and he typically plays.
Right.
So he's going to be critical of that quarterback. He's going to be critical of the, I don't know.
But they explain what they could have
hit.
To release the ball quicker. That's all stuff like that. Not like, man, his arm sucks and he's an idiot. Right? It's not that. Like, he should work on his footwork because his offensive line is bad. Yeah. We can all agree on that.
Play-by-play guys going, that's a 7-yard sack.
That's it.
Yeah. Who's Talks Less is coming up at 4:30. And we've got your emails coming up next to the men's room.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes. which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.